I can call the committee to order. Ask you to take a seat, please. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3344. That's the only bill we have up today. And Mr. Yates is going to start with a brief overview.
Morning, Mr. Chair.
Morning.
Yates, Legislative Revenues. I wanted to just quickly go through the bill so we can sort of get some idea of what's in the bill before we get the overall presentation. Essentially, what the bill is doing is establishing a new tax, which is a diesel fuel tax. Currently, you've got the gasoline tax in the first part of Chapter 319 and the used fuel tax in the second part. The difference between those two being primarily that gasoline's dominant use and almost only use is in as a motor vehicle fuel, so all of it is taxed. And then you have refund programs for off-road use and that sort of thing. The used fuel tax, the dominant use is home heating or other things other than motor fuel. And so basically you only tax the portion of that fuel which is burned on the highways. This takes out of the diesel, out of the used fuel category, diesel fuel, which is currently in that category, and moves it into a separate diesel fuel tax. And that's what this bill does essentially, is to set up the whole administrative structure for taxing diesel fuel. House Bill 34A, then, we're talking some definitions and terms that you'll run into as you go through the bill. Either diesel fuel or accountable diesel fuel is diesel fuel which is subject to tax under this chapter. Okay, so anything which is subject to tax is either identified as diesel fuel or accountable diesel fuel. Bulk transfer. I get confused as I read through the bill, and I'm not going to be able to help you too much because there are a lot of times in there it says transferred in bulk, and I don't know what that means. But if you find bulk transfer as such, that means either by vessel or by pipeline. That's all. So a truck is not a bulk transfer. But I think when it refers to transfer in bulk, it's talking about fuel transported in a tanker truck. Import and export, again, we're talking about accountable fuel being moved into this state or out of this state. So an importing firm is a firm that brings accountable fuel into the state. An exporting firm is a firm, again, that's taking from a Oregon refinery or an Oregon terminal fuel and moving it out of state. When you bring it in, you're subject to tax. When you take it out, you're not subject to tax. The RAC, then, the tax is being moved. Essentially, the current use fuel tax is imposed at the pump. This tax will be imposed at what's called the RAC. And basically, that's where you download from a refinery or a terminal two truckers, which are going to move the diesel fuel either to another distributor, down through the fuel chain, eventually to the retail outlet. And all of those intermediate positions are called distributors. So you've got a fuel supplier, which in general tends to be either a terminal or a refinery. And then from that point, it moves through distributors to that final retail distribution, who is also a distributor. Position holder is to identify the tax is imposed on the supplier, the person with the supplier's license. And when you have transfers, fuel moving between suppliers, two people that have a supplier's license, you have to identify which one is responsible for the tax. And the person holding the fuel who has possession of the fuel becomes the position holder. And that's what this term is intended, to identify the tax purpose. Distributor, I talked about. And again, the two-party exchange or buy-sell agreements is when you have fuel moving between two suppliers. Lastly, you have users and a subset of users, which are, if the users, international fuel tax agreement. This is one of the major provisions as far as simplifying compliance with the tax relative to the weight mile tax, is that the truckers basically have to report only to the state in which they're domiciled. And that state then is responsible for reports and payments to whatever state that motor carrier operates in. So user is basically anyone that's using diesel fuel to move a motor vehicle over Oregon's highways. Sections 2 to 8 of the bill impose a 25-cent tax. All right, the current tax is 24 cents. This is a 1-cent increase. It would separate so that you would have a 24-cent right now gasoline tax, 25-cent diesel fuel tax. That's imposed, again, whenever fuel is removed from an Oregon terminal, that person is responsible for the tax. If it's removed at the rack, and unless it's removed for export. The other case then is the terminal, an Oregon terminal. If it's in this state, again, it's taxable. If it's a bulk transfer to an unlicensed person, the bulk transfer then to a licensed person would be one of these buy-sell agreements where the position holder changes and the subsequent supplier would be responsible for the tax. So that's imposed at that point if it's at the rack, unless, again, it's for export. Now, again, bulk transfer there is talking about vessels and pipelines. Here again, if the fuel enters the state by bulk transfer from an unlicensed importer, it's subject to tax. And any fuel that enters the state other than bulk transfer is subject to the tax. So if you've got a truck coming in from Oregon, from Washington, when that truck enters the state, if it's importing fuel for use in the state, consumption in the state, it's subject to the tax. If untaxed fuel is removed to an unlicensed entity at any point in the chain, it's subject to the tax. If fuel is purchased by a blender, I think of mostly adding kerosene, essentially, to the fuel, then the person who's doing the blending is subject for the increase in the number of gallons. So if he buys 1,000 gallons of tax diesel fuel, add 500 gallons of kerosene, he owes the tax on 500 gallons of fuel. Okay. Dyed fuel, again, there are certain federal allowed uses. I've not, taking the time to find out what these are, but I will. Generally speaking, the federal program requires that all untaxed fuel be dyed and that it not be used on the roads. There are certain exceptions so that people can use dyed fuel. And where that occurs, Oregon is allowing that also to occur, but again, they have to be a licensed dyed fuel user. Sections 9 and 10, you might want to think about. I don't quite understand these. What they're doing here is partially converting from a cash to an accrual method of accounting, as far as I can understand. A supplier, say, sells fuel to a distributor on credit. If he does not receive payment before the tax is due, then he can take a refund for the unpaid portion of the tax. Say the tax is 10% of the fuel price, then 50% of the cost, what the distributor owes the supplier for the fuel he purchased, he only pays 50% of it. Then the supplier only has to pay 50% of the tax. And so it's converting to an accrual method in a sense. The supplier only has to pay the tax when he receives it. And the way that's done is to allow them a refund, essentially, for the tax that's due on the gallons for which no payment was received. The same, then, with respect to this, that's the fuel supplier who's responsible for the payment of the tax. Now, the fuel distributor is going to be making payments to the fuel supplier, and they have the opportunity to write off worthless. In other words, they're part of the chain. It gets sold from the supplier to the distributor on down to another distributor and so on until it reaches the vehicle. And if at some point somebody doesn't get paid, it becomes a worthless account, they can write it off and we don't get the tax on those gallons. Okay. Licenses. The tax requires a number of licenses, which I couldn't get to come in one at a time. But anyway, the major license is the fuel supplier. If you have a fuel supplier license, you can engage in all of these other activities. If you do not have a fuel supplier's license, then you have to have a license for each of these activities that you engage in. So if you're a fuel distributor and also a blender, you have to have both licenses. If you're a fuel supplier, you can do all of these activities under your fuel supplier license. Again, you have to be licensed as a dyed fuel user, and also licensed as an undyed, which is taxed fuel. Dyed fuel is not subject to tax. Undyed fuel is. The exemptions to this are vehicles under 26,000 pounds. You just go in and you fill up at the station. You do not have to have a license to use that fuel on the road. If you're HFSA, however, which applies international fuel tax agreements, which applies to vehicles over 26,000 pounds, you do have to be a licensed HFSA fuel user. The other exception are trip permits, which in the bill are allowed for 3 days, the fee $26. And this is in red because I think you might want to think about an inconsistency. A vehicle coming in is going to require a fuel trip permit. It's also going to require probably a registration fuel permit or a registration fee permit. We'll see later on the registration fee permits are either 5 day or 1 day. So, you know, it's kind of confusing for the guy that goes in and, you know, you get a 3 day fuel permit and you can get a 1 day or a 5 day registration permit. There ought to be some synchronization there. The process of licensing, then you have to apply essentially to the Department of Revenue, Transportation. And the bill specifies the information. It's fairly extensive. Part of the reason for that is other states have had a lot of problem with crime essentially getting into the distribution chain and with the tax dollars disappearing. So there's a lot of information that's required to be supplied by someone applying for a license, particularly for a fuel supplier's license. It gives the power of the Department of Transportation to investigate these persons applying, to use the state police in those investigations, and the state police can also, part of the information is fingerprints, can also apply for checks through the FBI. That's all back in Section 79. It does require bonding. The exceptions there, dyed fuel users, IFTA, and Marine. And the bill states that as you begin initially, the bond amount is equal to 3 times your monthly tax payment within the range of $1,000 and $100,000. If you're a good boy for a number of years, that's reduced to 2 times. If you make your tax payment. Now, you might want to think about that again because in House Bill 2190, you just increased those bonding limits to $1 million. It also gives the Department of Transportation the right to refuse to issue a license. And then 16 and 17 talk about revocation of license, reasonable cause. They have to give notice, and it provides for then release of any bonding amounts or the imposition of new bonding requirements in connection with the revocation. It also specifies that if there's a change of ownership, essentially the license must be revoked so that whoever the new owner is has to go through that process of being investigated before they can operate. The exception there is corporations, or at least it says, it's not a change of ownership unless certain, you know, a percentage of the stock is actually changes hands. 51% of the stock changes hands. It changes. It depends upon the size of the corporation, but it specifies the conditions under which a sale of corporate stock would constitute a change of ownership. Sections 18 and 19 deal with the records that the fuel supplier and distributors potentially must keep. Very general, all licensees and anyone else, essentially, which is handling accountable diesel fuel, has to keep records of their inventories, of any receipts of fuel, any deliveries of fuel, or any movements of fuel. So the record-keeping requirements, not reporting, but what you have to have at your place of business is fairly extensive. Again, international fuel tax. This is the user, again, the system by which the user reports their activities, are required to keep a daily record by vehicle on and off the road. And if there are no records, it provides for some presumed mileage, miles per gallon averages for their vehicles that the that ODOT can use essentially for assessing the tax. They don't have the record. If you're transporting, again, in bulk, whatever that means, I don't think it means your lawnmower gallon can from the service station. Most lawnmowers are not diesel anyway, I guess. But if you're transporting bulk fuel, you have to essentially have invoices and records on the vehicle, which you can show that the tax has been paid on that fuel. And again, it gives ODOT the powers to examine those records, to make adjustments, and provide for privacy of those records. Section 20 then deals with the reports that the fuel supplier, licensees, essentially distributors, are not required to file reports. It's the fuel supplier that's paying the tax. Dyed fuel users have to make reports as to if the users, and those are monthly. Well, in general, the reports have to be filed monthly. Again, dyed fuel users are quarterly, unless they're very small, under $250, they only have to report annually, and if the report's quarterly. It also specifies sort of contradicts that general position, but it gives ODOT authority to determine the reporting period by type of license. So, and specifically in there at times, it says if suppliers are not making their monthly payments, they can move to a shorter period of time. Provide penalty on reporting, penalty of perjury. It requires the report the last day, so you see there's some lag. If you sell fuel during January, you must report to the department by the last day of February how much fuel you actually distributed and was taxable in January. It does provide for the confidentiality. I want to look at this from the revenue office standpoint. I think we should have access to those records. As it's currently written, we do not. Section 21 to 24 deal with payment. Again, it's primarily the fuel supplier that's paying the tax, and that is paid at the time the report is filed. The supplier is allowed to take a 2% discount on the amount of tax. And that is then shared with distributors. Now, you know, in some cases, the fuel supplier may have his own complete distribution line on down through the retail outlet, in which case the fuel supplier essentially gets the full amount. But in general, this fuel is moving down a distribution chain. There may be a number of distributors involved before it eventually gets to the final retail outlet. And it provides for sharing that discount all the way down the line. There's, you know, you think of the paperwork that's involved as one reason for the discount, but the other main reason is the float. The tax is really due at the time the rubber hits the road, so to speak, when the miles are actually incurred on Oregon highways. But the fuel supplier is collecting that right at the top of the distribution chain. So there's a float there. He's paying the tax long before the tax is really due. And that 2% is intended at least partially to compensate them for that. Again, distributors are supposed to make their payments to the suppliers by the 22nd, and then by the end of that month, the supplier has to pay the tax. If they fail to pay, then they have to report that to the Department of Transportation, and the department may revoke the distributor's license. Again, it gives the Department of Transportation ability to deal with delinquencies, to assess interest and penalties, gives them the right to seize property. And here this throws up a flag. I was back in Philadelphia a couple of years ago at one of the national meetings, and they were talking about seizing property where it was contaminated. Essentially, it was a hazardous waste site. And you have to worry about this with gasoline. So, you know, it's a question about whether you want to go seize some property and then all of a sudden you can't sell it until you spend $1 million to clean it up. So you might want to think about that a little bit. Again, it provides for enforcement by the AG. And again, in 2190, we went through that process of moving the collection out of contract with the Department of Revenue into ODOT and providing for the same sorts of collection and enforcement activities as are under the Weight Miles Act. And again, you might want to update this language to be consistent with that process. It says that the presumed tax will use anytime, it shifts the burden of proof to the user to show that the tax, the use of the fuel is not a taxable use. It provides for a statute of limitations. User refunds, again, they're not as extensive as in the gasoline tax, where the tax is essentially imposed on everything. You're trying to impose the tax initially only on highway uses, so you have less refunds to deal with, but you have in general the case of overpayments and errors. Then you have the duplication of a lot of provisions that are already in the used fuel tax. A couple of these were reviewed. Let's see, we're 38. Let me find my place in the bill here. If you look at the top of page 19, section G is an existing section in terms of refunds. And it says, upon any county road for the removal of forest products as defined in ORI 321 and so on, this was reviewed in the tax expenditure report, and basically nobody's used it in the last 33 years, and so you might want to, again, pull it out, just in the spirit of the review that you've done, essentially, of these types of things. Power takeoffs, now, basically fuel... In this case, they don't have a separate tank, so they're burning the same fuel that the vehicle is burning when it's moving on the road, taking it out of the same tank, but it's not being used on the road. Okay, so it's a refund basically for tax paid for fuel consumed upon which the tax was paid, which is not used on the highways. And that's for concrete mixers, self-loading log trucks, and garbage trucks, it's 45%. It also gives ODOT the power, by rule, to grant other refunds where they think that's appropriate. Log trucks are allowed up to 25%. That's the maximum. They have to get that, they have to show records in terms of the 25% of their mileage was off-road, off-highway. If they have no records, they're allowed 15%. Investor-owned utilities. Again, a lot of time spent presumably under the poles with the motors running. They're allowed a 70% reduction in the bill. I don't know whether that's appropriate or not, but that's what's in there. And again, the operation of ancillary equipment, where it has its own tank. And I don't know quite why this is in here, because I would think you just put dyed fuel in there, dyed fuel on which no tax has been paid. But if you are putting tax fuel in there, you're allowed 100% discount because none of it's being used on the road. And again, it deals with the Indian tribes and discount for fuel burned on tribal land. Miscellaneous provisions, then section 39 to, or sections 1 to 41 are essentially the fuel tax aspects of the bill. And this sort of ends up that section. And it says that the ultimate liability for the tax is with the person who uses the fuel on the road. It provides for ODOT rules, and it provides for violations of sections 1 to 41, essentially generally a misdemeanor, except in cases where you're intentionally falsifying reports, in which case it's and unable to pay the tax money. You've misappropriated the funds, then it's considered a theft of public money. The next section deals with the road use assessment fee, and this is a change. The current road use assessment fee is a 5.2 cents per EFL mile. This says it's $3 per ton over the allowable limit, and this would apply to vehicles over 98,000 pounds. Sort of for comparison here, an example, where you might have some heavy loads, typical type of vehicle is a 7-axle vehicle. So if you consider a steering axle and 2 3-axle units called tritums, you've got 7 axles. And if the allowable load on that vehicle would be 120,000 pounds. If it's actually carrying, say, 150 or 30,000 pounds over the limit, the fee, no matter how far you drive, would be $45. For comparison, the current fee would be 76 cents per mile. Permits, here we get changes, increases generally in existing permits. This is the one that's particularly not comparable with the fuel permit. Heavy vehicle permit is currently in the law at $21. It replaces that with $42 for a 5-day permit and $21 for a 1-day permit. Heavy trailer permits are doubled. Registration weight permits are doubled. Vehicle registration permits are doubled. Variance permits are doubled. And then there's a separate schedule in this permit section for vehicles over 80,000 pounds, which puts essentially another registration fee on top. But as a permit, it's not apportionable. So you can't divide up the amount upon the miles in-state versus out-of-state. You have to pay the whole fee that's in that section. Registration fees. Now, what I'm going to talk about are the commercial vehicles because these are the ones that change. In the bill, if you look through it, you have three sections of registration fees. Well, you've got three or four pages of registration fees, but the ones that are scheduled, you've got three sections, one for commercial vehicles, one for charitable vehicles and tow trucks, and a third one for farm vehicles. This only addresses the commercial vehicles. There's no change in any of those other schedules. For the commercial vehicles, there's no change for vehicles under 26,000 pounds. Again, you might want to look at these in terms of the cost responsibility study. We talked a little bit the other day with House Bill 2082. The initial output of that study suggests some modification in those registration fees to achieve cost responsibility. This changes the registration fees substantially for vehicles between 26,000 and 105,000. The bill as it is right now has about 11.25 per fold increase. So if we're talking about the dominant truck size, which is 78,000 to 80,000 pounds, the fee goes up from $320 to $3,601.53. Incidentally, I'm told that motor vehicles, computer system won't have handle cents, so we're going to have to round these off. the registration fee is bifurcated into a fixed and a variable portion. The fixed portion, as you go through and compute it in the schedules there, is about 18.1% of the total. The variable fee, about 82%. And again, for that 78 to 80,000 pound class, you're talking about a $652 fixed fee, $2,950 variable fee. Now, the variable fee is not always imposed. If you're a concrete mixer, log truck, or sand and gravel truck, instead of the variable fee, you pay $500. So you pay the fixed fee. Everybody pays the fixed fee. So you pay the fixed fee plus $500. Then for the last group of vehicles here, you only pay the fixed fee. There is no variable fee. So that's for garbage and recyclable trucks. Vehicles in the range, vehicles under 60,000 pounds, where they're everywhere miles is less than 30,000. So it's not just mileage in Oregon, but mileage everywhere is less than 30,000. I'm not sure the way that's written in the bill. I think it could be clarified. I think that's logical interpretation, but it's not real clear. Again, investor-owned utility vehicles do not pay the variable fee, and vehicles over 60,000 pounds that are used for installation of heavy equipment do not pay the variable fee. Then for trailers in Oregon only pay one time. They're not assessed every year or every 2 years. There's a one-time assessment, and that's tripled. The bill provides for quarterly payments where these fees are apportioned. So if your registration fees up here of $3,601, if you're doing business in interstate commerce and apportioning those fees, you can pay them quarterly. You need to have some discussion, I think, with the department there in terms of the problems that are imposed or created by that provision. There's some accounting and just tracking problems. And I think, as I read the bill, I don't find that provision for domestic firms. They have to pay annually. So you need to do some thinking about whether you want that provision in there or not. The rest of the sections 48 to 71 are just conforming. A lot of existing laws change, has to be changed because you've got a new diesel tax that has to be referenced, and you're getting rid of the weight mile tax, so you take out those references, and then there's obsolete language that's cleaned up. Section 73 to 78 deal with audits. These are not temporary sections, but ongoing sections. And again, I want the department to look closely at these and make sure they work. Basically, you're talking about how you audit motor carriers, but the emphasis seems to be on, sorry for the acronyms again, but international registration programs. So it's on registration fees and on IFTA reporting, which is users reporting miles in Oregon. Again, there's a 3-year statute of limitations, which is sort of the same as the weight mile tax. If you haven't audited an account, a report that was filed 3 years ago, too late, then you're allowed one additional year after the audit period runs out to make an assessment. So there's a 4-year statute of limitations. It specifies the interest and penalties as they apply to the registration fees and IFTA fees, but not anything else, no penalties which might apply to the sections that are left in there, which are mostly permits now and things of that sort. And it does provide for reassessment. There is an error again in Section 80. This provides for an inventory tax. Basically, what you've got now is a change. The tax is at the pump. You're moving to a tax at the rack. You've got a whole bunch of fuel in the distribution chain. And if you didn't tax it at that point in time when you imposed the tax at the rack, it would escape taxation. So the inventory tax is designed to tax it at that time, and it should be taxed at the time the tax is imposed on January 1 of 2000. As the bill reads, it's imposed on the effective date of this act. Hopefully, but that's before January 1, 90 days after signing that anyway. The tax is then due within 30 days, and it provides for an exemption. You've got a big tank. The pipe from which you pump the fuel doesn't reach the bottom of the tank. There's maybe 200 gallons left in there, which is unpumpable. That's not taxed. The bill provides for some adjustments to the tax rate in the event that it is not revenue neutral, or in the event that the revenues fall below the forecast. And for what it requires is ODOT to make semi-annual forecasts, and then there are some decision points. You look at the actual fuel tax that was paid in the first half of the year 2000, that's the first 6 months in which the tax is imposed, and you compare it to the forecast. Okay, and if it's more than 5% over, you reduce the fuel tax rate from 25 cents down to 22.5. And if it's less than 95% of the forecast, you increase it by 2.5 to 27.5 cents. You do this again for the second half of the year. You adjust the fuel tax rate on April 1. You do it again for the first 6 months of 2001. And again, you can make the same adjustment. When you're all done with that, you've got some rate. And you set the rate then for January 1, 2000 as that rate, however adjusted, it may still be 25 cents, it may be higher, maybe lower, you add 4 cents. And that part of that, I'm not sure how this fits into the 2082. I think it doesn't. I think what this is saying is there's a lot of one-time revenues that you pick up by shifting. The weight mile tax continues. You continue to get auditing revenues from that. There are other one-time revenues that make the first couple of years reaching revenue neutral easier, if you like, than when you look at the tax further out in the future. So I think that 4 cents is intended to make the tax revenue neutral with respect to current law, not the upcoming 4 cent increase, but, you know, Bob Ruffel can talk about that. Again, there are temporary provisions in Section 85 which allow these sections to continue in even after they're repealed. Okay? We're repealing these sections, but they have to continue because you're still auditing weight mile tax accounts, and you can continue to audit those for 3 years, and so these are made applicable for that purpose until that time runs out, essentially. Then all I've done here is to list the sections that are repealed and give you sort of a chapter heading type of explanation of what those sections are. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but basically that's the deal.
Thanks, Dick. Any questions so far in this presentation? Mr. Merkley?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Dick. I'd like to go to your chart on sections 81 through 84. A couple questions about that. It's
sections 81 through 84?
Yes. This is the revenue neutral adjustment mechanism. My first question is, does this process of annual adjustments in order to maintain revenue neutrality continue onward past the 2001 timeframe?
No.
Yeah.
The rate that's set on 1-1-2000 becomes a permanent rate.
Okay.
Excuse me, 1-1-2002.
Right. And so cost accountability studies would continue under this law?
What I would envision, of course, this is always up to the legislature, but if you put it in a historical context, what you would have is a continual biennial highway cost allocation study to determine the cost responsibility share of heavy vehicles. Then you would take a look at fuel tax rate, the registration fees, and adjust those to the extent you could to achieve that heavy vehicle share.
Okay. One more question here. This addresses the fuel tax portion, but how is revenue neutrality obtained on the registration side?
Well, revenue neutrality is a fun concept, I guess. What you're saying, you're choosing some benchmark to represent what you get out of the existing system in terms of total revenues. And then you're changing the system, and you're looking at the total revenues that system will generate. And in that process, the discussions that have gone on with respect to revenue neutrality have also made adjustments for changes in costs, administrative costs. If one program, under the current weight mile tax, there's substantial costs of administering that tax, and all of those costs are borne by the truckers. Okay, in the highway cost allocation study, those are all allocated to heavy vehicles. So if you reduce those costs by moving to a fuel tax system, and there are administrative savings, then that's going to reduce, in some sense, the amount of revenue you have to achieve to reach, quote-unquote, revenue neutrality. Now, I don't know really how to talk about that concept with respect to an individual tax, the registration fees, which is the question you asked, I think. Obviously, it's not neutral with respect to registration fees. They're increased substantially. Even for the vehicles that only pay the fixed fee, in general, the registration fee is still increased. But they don't have to pay the weight mile tax. So that is supposed to balance in some sense. What we'll do eventually, and I'm not prepared to do that today, is to try to look at different vehicle types, different weight groups, and ask how it changes within those different categories. So you look, two perspectives that you can look at with respect to revenue neutrality. One is individual vehicle. Is the tax burden on each vehicle the same under both systems? Are they meeting their cost responsibility shares under both systems? The other perspective is from the perspective of a motor carrier. And that, I think, is the way in which the industry views it. Is the motor carrier going to be paying its cost responsibility under, if it is under the existing system, will it continue under the new system?
Thank you, Dick.
Yeah.
Barbara, do we have anybody signed up yet, or is it just Bob Russell? Are you the main guy? So we can get the lights back on. Bob, why don't you direct the show here and introduce people as they fall into place.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm Director of Government Affairs with the Oregon Trucking Association. I have with me today a number of representatives of other trucking associations in Oregon that are also supporting this bill. I would like to take a minute and let them introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about the associations that they represent.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve McQuaid. I'm here representing the Oregon Grocery Industry Association, trade association representing retail grocers and wholesalers and distributors that transact over 90% of all the annual food sales in Oregon on an annual basis, which is about between $5 and $6 billion industry. I think it's important to note we're here in support of this bill. It's important to note that the people I represent drive tens of millions of in-state miles. In the case of the food wholesalers and retailers, those self-distributing retailers such as Safeway, Fred Meyer, Albertsons, Winco, United Grocers, those folks are all located in the state, and the many miles they do drive are in-state miles with the fleets that are based here in Oregon. We are supportive of this bill, and we'd like to make it sure that you note the main reason my members are supportive of this bill is the fact that they want to get out from the administrative burdens placed on them by tracking the weight mile tax. It's simply that. We're not there here to shift the cost. We're not here trying to avoid our fair share of the taxes. We simply want to get out from under the burden that the weight mile tax places on our members as they do their daily business. And we would hope that you would support the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in support of the bill. Our members transport manufactured homes both in-state and out-of-state. We think we have the worst of all possible worlds in terms of the tax system. We pay rate mile when we're loaded. We pay IFTA when we're out-of-state. And we pay used fuel tax, which is a per-gallon tax, on the majority of our miles because those miles are unloaded. Our members report that Oregon has the most difficult reporting system of any state we operate in. So we hope this has a bill as well. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Mitchell. I'm with the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, which is a trade association representing garbage and recycling collectors. They're also operators of landfills, transfer station, and material recovery facilities all across the state of Oregon. We have a lot of trucks on the road every day picking up your garbage and recyclables. We are low mileage, high fuel users, and we've worked hard with the Oregon Trucking Association during the interim and in previous sessions on the weight mile repeal, and we're pleased to say we can support it. Thank you.
I assume if any of the committee members have questions, you'll all be back.
Good morning. My name is Bill Stewart, and I represent the Oregon Frame and Warehousing Association. We are the household good carriers, local cartage, and warehousing, primarily based in Oregon. Our members operate primarily lower-weighted trucks at lower miles based on the needs of our operation for supporting the bill as well.
Good morning. My name is Bob McKellar. I represent the Oregon Forest Products Transportation Association. The people I represent haul logs, chips, lumber, and so forth. Most of our members are smaller truckers, smaller not meaning in stature, but in the number of trucks that they operate. We have many one-truck owner operators. We have many self-loader operators who operate a self-loading log truck that is low mileage and high fuel use, and we also represent the people we represent are largely in-state truckers. Our board of directors and our members have extensively surveyed our membership and provided opportunity for them to make comparisons to see if this is adversely affects them, and 99 and 44 and 100% it does not, and therefore we are in support of this piece of legislation, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Bob, could you wait to this second? Yeah, Bob. Since you're is he the last one of the
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's one other that is unfortunately providing testimony in another committee this morning, and that's Al Elkins that represents the Oregon Tow Truck Association, which is also in support of this bill.
Okay. Just let me ask Bob McKellar, are you affected by the registration fee increase? Your members?
Well, I can't say no, because that's not technically correct. But what we've done here is over the period of time that we've been working on this piece of legislation, the attempt that we have made, which has been successful, is to craft the registration fee in a way that each trucking segment, like log trucking, for example, is approximately affected dollar-wise under this proposal the same as under the way they are presently operating. To achieve that, what is done in this bill is that a log trucker pays a lower registration fee than an interstate truck would pay. For example, we pay, the schedule shows $1,152 and some odd cents, 9 cents or something. So the registration fee, that combination of registration fee plus the fuel tax, puts the log trucking business in approximately the same tax paying basis as it is currently. So it does not adversely affect the people that I represent.
Okay. I guess fundamentally my question was if you were going to pay more under this mechanism, is it worth it to you to not have to deal with weight and miles, in your opinion?
Actually, we actually don't pay more. We pay more in registration fee, but in total tax, the log trucking industry is going to pay about the same amount under this piece of legislation that it would pay, that it's paying now. And so, yes, the registration fee goes up, but in total, our tax position is not going to be adversely affected. There are some people in our industry who will pay a little bit more. There are some who will pay a little bit less, but it's approximately a wash. It will provide us with some economy in paperwork, but not to the degree that a grocery industry truck, because they change configurations all the time, and we don't do that much.
Okay.
But we are very much in support of this piece of legislation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell again. Before we begin, I would first like to acknowledge the efforts of the Interim House Transportation Committee that helped us extensively in developing this proposal. Particularly, I would like to thank Representative Wells and Lehman, who co-chaired a subcommittee during the interim that worked extensively with the trucking industry and everyone else that has an interest in transportation finance. I would also like to acknowledge and thank Betsy Earls of AOI for her efforts. After the interim expired, Betsy took over the leadership role and brought us to conclusion so that we have what we consider to be an outstanding proposal to present to you today. So what you have in front of you is a notebook which contains our testimony that we're going to be going over this morning. It's in sections, and we'll go through it section by section. Basically, the trucking industry, as you've heard from a number of the association representatives, has a problem. And that problem is our current system of taxation. We also have a solution, and that is the diesel fuel tax. What we'd like to do this morning is to start by talking to you about the problem and why that represents a problem to our industry. The first issue is that Oregon is not uniform with the other states and Canadian provinces in North America. Now, that wouldn't be significant if the trucking industry only operated within the borders of the state. But the trucking industry, even those of us that are located here in Oregon, operate in multiple states. And so uniformity is a significant issue to us as we are impacted by the tax systems in all the states that we operate. Recognizing, and I will be repeating this several times today, that Oregon is the only state and only Canadian province that does not have a diesel fuel tax on trucks. And we are unique in that sense. Oregon is unique in a lot of other ways, as you well know, but in this particular instance, our uniqueness is to our detriment. In 1991, Congress created a national uniform system for truck taxation, and basically it was a trade-off. In 1978, the Federal Highway Administration did a cost allocation study, much like the one that you've been hearing about for the last couple of weeks. What that cost allocation study determined was that the trucking industry was paying approximately 50% of its fair share for our federal highways. So obviously Congress wanted to increase our tax rates significantly. So what they did is they said, we will help you to pay those increased taxes by giving you a more efficient tax system throughout the nation. And what they did is they created the International Fuel Tax Agreement and the International Registration Plan, which Dick alluded to earlier when he was going over the bill. Sort of to explain to you how that works, when I first got into trucking, which has been many, many years ago now, our company operated interstate, and we would have to go to each state to get operating authority. We would have to go to each state individually and show proof of insurance. We'd have to go to each state to provide, to pick up size and weight permits. We would have to go to each state individually and pay diesel fuel taxes, weight mile taxes, whatever kind of taxes they had. We would also have to go to each state individually and register our trucks. You may recall, back in the 70s and before, when you saw a truck coming down the road, it had plates all over it and stickers and all that kind of stuff. That was part of that burden. We had to have indicia, or indications of compliance, for each of those requirements in every state we operated in, and we had to slap them all over our trucks. Now, that was an incredible burden. The way it works today, I go down to the Department of Transportation and to register my truck. I tell them what miles I operated in each state in the previous year. They then figure out on a percentage basis how much registration fee I owe for each state that I'm going to operate. I write them one check, and they distribute the money to all the states in which I operate. And it works the same way with a diesel fuel tax. I go down to ODOT, I register with ODOT, and I get a little sticker that goes on the side of the truck. And as you drive down the freeway, you may have noticed it. They say IFTA, and they've got the outlines of the state that issued them. Those are the IFTA indicia that indicates that we are registered under the International Fuel Tax Agreement. Once we have those stickers, then we can travel without having to purchase permits or do anything else in all of the states and Canadian provinces. And at the end of the quarter, we file a tax report, again, with ODOT that basically distributes the revenue that we have paid when we purchased our fuel at the pump to all of the states. Then each state has the responsibility for compliance of its motor carriers to make sure that they've paid the proper taxes and registration fees for all the states that they operate. So, for example, Oregon auditors will audit Oregon motor carriers, but not just for our travel in Oregon, but also for our travel in all of the states. And in that way, the states are working cooperatively to maintain compliance with all of these tax regulations. A while back, you had a presentation by Joe Stowers and Roger Mingo, and they were talking to you about cost allocation. They also have recently issued a report, and this was one they presented in January to the Transportation Research Board. And it's entitled Alternative Approaches to the Taxation of Heavy Vehicles. And it is a very comprehensive study of truck taxes throughout this country. One of the things that they did when they conducted their study is they did a survey of all the state administrators that are responsible for the collection of these taxes. What I'd like to do is read you a quote from this report that was based on all those surveys. Basically what it says is there is general agreement that the International Registration Plan and the International Fuel Tax Agreement reduce carrier compliance costs, contribute to the equity, economic efficiency, and stability of revenues, and have positive economic impact. So the people that actually collect these taxes are very much in support of the national uniform system of the International Registration Plan and the International Fuel Tax Agreement. Now, I mentioned earlier that today I go down at the ODOT to pay and register under the International Fuel Tax Agreement, and that's true. Oregon is a member of IFTA. The only difference is that Oregon collects no revenues to stay in the state of Oregon. They only collect revenues that are then distributed to other states. Behind the title page here, I provided for you a comparison of diesel and gasoline fuel taxes in all of the states and Canadian provinces. Today, diesel fuel taxes range from a low in the state of Alaska of 8 cents a gallon to a high in the state of Pennsylvania of 30.8 cents a gallon. I thought that as you're deliberating this bill and others dealing with transportation finance, that you might find this table to be helpful. I'd like to turn to the next section, and that's the efficiency or lack thereof of our current weight distance tax. Oregon's weight distance tax is one of the most complicated taxes that exists today. Most tax systems, as you're aware, have one, two, maybe three tax rates. For example, Oregon's income tax has a total of three different tax rates. Unfortunately, Oregon's weight mile tax has 85 different tax rates in the form that is in today. And that wouldn't be so bad if each trucking company only had one tax rate that they used for a year. That would be fine, like we do with the income tax. Or even if you just had a single tax rate for each truck. But that, too, is not the way it works. The way it works is each time you change the number of trailers behind that tractor, you have a different tax rate. So if you have a single trailer, that's one tax rate. If you take that trailer off and you just have the tractor, that's another tax rate. If you put two trailers on, that's another one. Three, that's a different tax rate. And the company that I work for when I'm not doing this, we're changing the configuration of our truck 10 and 12 times a day. So each day, our trucks have 10 to 12 different tax rates that we have to keep track of. What that means is our truck drivers, who quite frankly are not known for their love of paperwork, have to keep track of each one of those changes and the exact miles that they operate under each vehicle configuration. That information is then turned into our dispatch office, and that gets coded into a computer, which then goes into our accounting office. And finally, at the end of the month, our accountant does the late mile tax report and sends it into the state. With Oregon's late mile tax, we file monthly tax reports. Under the IFTA system, there are quarterly tax reports to be filed. So the reporting burden under the IFTA system is significantly less. Also, those trucking companies that do not operate outside of Oregon's borders under our proposal will not have to file any tax reports at all. They're going to pay their diesel fuel tax at the pump. There's no reporting requirement. They'll register their vehicles at the beginning of the year, and they'll be done. Sort of to illustrate to you the difference, here are the weight mile tax reports for one quarter from a relatively small trucking company that operates out of Central Oregon. And there are three monthly reports because that's what they have to file in the quarter. Now, this is the tax report and the backup information that they must maintain for audit purposes for these tax reports. For the very same company, and this is their IFTA tax report for the same period of time. The difference is these tax reports are for Oregon only. This tax report is for 15 states that this company operates in. It could very well be for more, but this company only operates in 15 western states. And you can see the difference in the administrative burden for this particular company. As Mr. McKellar mentioned earlier, the administrative burden of the weight mile tax varies from carrier to carrier. One company, this is a relatively small one, may have this level of burden, another may have less, another may have more. So it depends on the company and its operations how much of a burden the weight mile tax represents to it. However, I can tell you that because it's the Oregon-based trucking companies that operate the most miles in Oregon, it's the Oregon-based trucking industry that has the greatest administrative burden under the weight mile tax system. And sort of put this into context for you, we did an analysis and compared the state of Washington with the state of Oregon. Washington has a diesel fuel tax and registration fee system. They operate under IFTA and the IRP. Oregon has the weight mile tax. We did our analysis, and we determined that Oregon has 188 more state employees to collect taxes from trucks than does the state of Washington. And yet the state of Washington collects more total revenue from the trucking industry. ODOT did a similar analysis, and they determined that the difference was not 188, but in fact 181. And working with ODOT, what we recognize is when we implement a diesel fuel tax, there is going to be a transition period. So what you've got in essence is you've got the tail of the weight mile tax that goes forward, and then you've got the beginnings of the diesel fuel tax. So all of the additional employees will not be able to be reduced immediately. So the trucking industry is in agreement with the Department of Transportation that upon implementation of this diesel fuel tax, and the reduction in the number of state employees would be 106. Now, that ODOT's original estimate was that would save them $12.4 million per biennium. And they've since refined that estimate, and the new estimate is $11.6 million per biennium. Once the diesel fuel tax is fully implemented, then there would be additional savings, conceivably up to a total of $20 million per biennium. Now, ODOT has already reduced a number of these positions, and they have eliminated 48 positions in this current budget cycle out of the 106. They have also indicated to us that they will make every effort to make sure that these folks aren't laid off. They will try to place them in other vacant positions within the department. Although, because of some of the specialized nature of these folks, they may not be able to avoid layoffs. But at least we're very hopeful that there won't be any significant ones. The trucking industry has a similar savings as does government. We don't really know how much the trucking industry is going to save. The company that I work for, McCracken Motor Freight, we're pretty confident that we're going to save between $24,000 and $26,000 a year because of our frequent configuration changes and the amount of paperwork that we have to deal with. But say that on the average, a trucking company was only going to save $1,000 a year. But you folks know, having been acquainted with business, that that's not much money. At $1,000 per year, there are presently 36,000 trucking companies operating in Oregon. That's $36 million in savings per year. From our perspective, that money could much better be spent on roads than on this administrative burden. We've got the actual analysis from ODOT following this cover page in this section. And I'd like to go through a few of the highlights with you. And down at the bottom of the first page, they start listing a number of things that they will no longer have to do, and that's what will result in the savings. One of the principal things they will no longer have to do is have to deal with what is called the multiple declared weights, or the multiple weights for each configuration change, and the individual vehicle records as we do today. That's going to save a tremendous amount of staff time and computer time. And there's no more vehicle-specific tax reporting. Today, on these tax reports, each vehicle is listed separately, and under each vehicle, each declared weight is listed separately. Under this tax report, it's simply one line for the entire fleet. So that dramatically reduces the burden. Turn to the next page. Today, the Department of Transportation is required to collect the weight mile tax for in excess of 30,000 trucking companies that operate in Oregon. Auditors have to fly all over North America to audit these carriers. That number is going to be reduced from approximately 30,000 to 4,000 under the International Fuel Tax Agreement because ODOT will only be required to audit carriers within the state of Oregon. That will save a considerable amount of travel expense and time and effort. Today, Oregon also issues a unique plate. We are the only state that issues a plate that is a non-registration plate. There's approximately 253,000 of these plates that are on our trucks throughout the country. We will no longer have to issue those plates, nor will we have to put them on. And that will save a considerable amount of money. There's also a lot of data going down to the last bullet here on this page that ODOT collects in order to enforce the weight mile tax. They estimated that last year in diesel fuel tax purchases alone, their staff keeps 324,000 lines of data to be used for audit purposes. All of that will be gone under the new system. Next tab and the next issue in terms of why we have a problem is that the trucking industry believes that the weight mile tax has a very, very high level of evasion. Evasion is a tough issue. It's sort of like proving a negative, and it's very difficult to tell how much evasion is out there unless you change the system. Then you can sort of get some handle on it. However, there's some sort of common sense things that, from us, make some sense. Oregon's weight mile tax is a self-reporting tax, meaning that as a taxpayer, I'm required to keep track of all the information and then fill out the tax reports and send it into the state. It's done on the honor system. The weight mile tax is also collected and paid after the fact. The way it works today is in the month we conduct the operations, we have to calculate the information and report and pay the tax the following month.
Compare that with the diesel fuel tax, where you're paying the diesel fuel tax when you buy the fuel before you can ever operate the vehicle. Sort of to give you an analogy, Oregon's late mile tax is if we had a sales tax in Oregon, heaven forbid, where each one of us was required at the end of the month and to list all of our purchases, multiply it times the sales tax rate, and then send it into the Department of Revenue. Now, all in this room, of course, would accurately list all their purchases. But I think some folks, the temptation may be after the fact to forget a purchase or two. As you all know, the way a real sales tax works is it's collected by the merchant at the time you make the purchase, and they send the money into the Department of Revenue. Well, that's the way the diesel fuel tax works, too. You can't get the fuel until you pay the tax. The most recent study on weight distance tax evasion was conducted in the state of New York, which is one of four other states that continue to have weight distance taxes. Idaho has a weight distance tax, New Mexico, New York, and Kentucky. Although, again, Oregon is unique. It's the only state that doesn't have a diesel fuel tax. And the study was conducted in New York at the end of last year by Syracuse University. And what they determined was the range of evasion of New York's weight distance tax, and recognizing that the tax rates in New York are about half of what they are in Oregon, was between 32 and 44%. That's a significant evasion factor. From the trucking industry's perspective, and those are the folks that are running on our highways for free, that aren't paying their fair share, and that have a competitive advantage over those of us that are paying our tax. We very much want to reduce that level of evasion. Now, with the diesel fuel tax, there's a number of features, and some of them Dick went over this morning, that have been instituted in the last several years that dramatically help curb tax evasion under a diesel fuel tax. One of the things that helps dramatically is to raise the level of taxation to the terminal rack. Now, what that means is that basically you have about 20 taxpayers that are responsible for paying all the diesel fuel taxes collected in Oregon. They're responsible to pay the tax to the Department of Transportation. Compare that with over 30,000 trucking companies that pay the weight mile tax today. You could almost put an auditor to each one of those oil companies and have them live there full time to make sure that they were paying their fair share, although I'm not suggesting that.
First Gallagher.
Another mechanism that has been implemented in recent years that Dick also mentioned was the diesel fuel dying program, which is a federal program. Essentially, the majority of diesel fuel tax is not used as a highway fuel. The majority of it is used for home heating oil. It's used in trains. It's used in agricultural equipment, all of those kinds of things where it never touches the highway. So what the federal government did to make the distinction between off-highway and highway fuel or taxable and non-taxable was to implement the diesel fuel dying program. All off-highway diesel fuel today in this country is dyed red. That is a red dye in it. And it's real easy to enforce because today in Oregon, IRS auditors go to our ports of entry, and when we pull trucks in for a safety compliance check, they just open the tank and they put a little dipstick down there and pull out a little bit of fuel to see if it's got any color. If it's got any color, then that's an immediate $10,000 penalty. So there's quite a deterrent as well as a mechanism to detect if someone's using untaxable fuel. In order to give you some idea of how effective these mechanisms have been, in 1994, the federal government took the federal diesel fuel tax to the rack and also implemented the diesel fuel dying program. And there was an immediate increase of 38% in tax revenues without any increase in tax rates. That was nearly $1.1 billion a year of additional revenues without any increase in tax rates. The states that have proposed, have done the same thing, moved their point of taxation to the rack, and piggybacks on top of the federal diesel fuel buying program, have on the average increased their revenues by 25% without any additional increase in tax rates. Now, there have been a number of studies, evasion studies, and you'll probably hear about some of them. There was a study that was done on Oregon's weight mile tax in 1995 to determine the level of compliance or the evasion level. The conclusion was in Oregon, the evasion level of the weight mile tax was between 3 and 7%. Some of you may know that in the prior lifetime, I worked for government, and I was responsible for collection of the weight mile tax. As a matter of fact, I was responsible at this particular time and was responsible for this study. This particular study was more a performance evaluation of our collection mechanism than it was an evasion study. For many years, the Department of Transportation had criticized the Public Utility Commission because of the high cost of the collection of the weight mile tax. So they commissioned a study to look at how we performed, how efficient we were in collecting the tax. And the way we've conducted the study is the contractor put some cameras out on a lot of the roads around Oregon, and in some cases they had warm bodies out there. And every time a truck went by, they wrote down the PUC plate number that's on the front of the truck, the red and white plate, and recorded it. And all this information then came back to us, the PUC. We sorted it by company, and then we went out and we audited the company. What we did is the information that was collected as part of the study, that was put in the sealed envelope, and the auditor didn't have access to that information. But they had information to all the rest of the data that PUC collected on trucking companies. For example, a minute ago I mentioned that every time a truck fuels in Oregon, that information is collected for audit purposes. Every time they pass a weigh station, every time they get a ticket, every time there's a safety inspection, there's voluminous amounts of data that's collected in order to enforce the weight mile system. So the auditors would go out, they would conduct their audit, and then at the end of the audit, they would open the sealed envelope, and they would say, well, if I had known this when I conducted my audit, would it increase the amount of tax that I was going to assess? And they'd go through each individual sighting, and they'd say, well, no, I got that one because of this one. Nope, I got that one. I got this one. Well, maybe I didn't get that one. Essentially, what we were doing was evaluating the performance of the audit. And from their perspective, it was real clear that under their current system, they got virtually everything, which showed a very, very low evasion rate. This was also before the trucking industry was deregulated in Oregon. And unfortunately, deregulation has increased the impetus or encouraged folks to evade the tax. There was also, around the same time, a diesel fuel tax evasion study done in the state of Oregon, which was interesting because Oregon doesn't have a diesel fuel tax. So this was a theoretical study, and it was based on a diesel fuel tax that would have been collected at the pump, not at the rack. It was prior to the diesel fuel tax dying system. And there were all kinds of differences between the proposal that's before you today in this particular study. The initial results of the Oregon diesel fuel evasion study indicated that evasion for a tax of 24 cents a gallon would be about 24%. However, the person that conducted the study with some additional data later revised those results and reduced his estimated evasion rate to about 12%. Attached in this section, you've got the weight mile tax evasion study that was done by Syracuse University. And I would like to read you one short quote out of that particular study. It's on page III, if you'd like to follow along. It's at the bottom of the last paragraph. Is taken as a whole, and the principle of using the ton-mile tax or weight distance tax to charge for highway use is not especially compelling if business distortions, evasion, compliance costs, and administrative costs outweigh the conceptual basis for the tax.
Thank you, Bob. Why don't you take a breath and let me ask the folks who just came in, the students, where are you from?
Oh, they're mine.
Oh. Representative Shetterly is very interested in it. Welcome. We're getting a presentation on House Bill 3344, which has to do with a diesel tax in place of a white mile tax. This is the Revenue Committee, so welcome.
I have a question, if I may.
Representative Shetterly.
Thank you. I was out for a few minutes, but did you say what you, I guess you're telling us that you think that the evasion rate is higher than 3 to 5% under the current weight mile. What would you estimate as the evasion rate in Oregon now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, you know, as I said earlier, estimating evasion is a very difficult thing. It's like proving a negative. Nobody really knows until you change the system. You know, based on the experience of other states where they have change their diesel fuel taxes and move them to the rack, and where they piggybacked on top of the federal the diesel fuel buying program, and recognizing that before they made those changes, and motor carriers were on a self-reporting system, much like our weight distance tax, those states have collected an additional 25% revenue on the average without increasing their tax rate. So if we were sort of doing this, we would say 25% is probably in the ballpark from our perspective. It could be more than that. It could be less than that. But that's what we believe is in that neighborhood.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm a little troubled by that. So the pitch is we need to change our tax system so that your industry doesn't have to evade it by a rate of 25%.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, what we're proposing is a more efficient collection mechanism that reduces evasion, no question. The industry, the segment of the industry that I represent are Oregon-based trucking companies, and they are the cream of the crop. They are not evading the tax. As a matter of fact, it's very difficult for us to evade the tax because we live here, and it's real easy for the Department of Transportation to send an auditor into our businesses. Matter of fact, many of us live in fear of that day when the auditor walks in because the complexity of the tax is very difficult to be 100% compliant. But yet we're competing with folks from out of state that do have the ability to evade the tax and, in fact, do take advantage of it. And just to give you an anecdote, in my particular company, we hire drivers all the time. As you probably heard, the trucking industry has a huge driver shortage, and there's a fairly significant turnover. About a year ago, a driver came to us and said, how much is the bonus that you pay to avoid Oregon's weigh station? I said, what? He says, yeah, the last company I worked for, they paid me $15 for every time I went around an Oregon scale. I said, why would they do that? Well, because when you go through the scale, they collect the information on the truck, and that goes to the weight mile tax auditors. If you avoid the scale, they don't have the information. He said, and my company didn't report it. What I found, as we've interviewed more and more drivers, is there's more and more trucking companies that are paying bonuses when drivers avoid the scale. So there are ways to avoid the weight mile tax that don't exist for the diesel fuel tax. And again, it's the Oregon-based trucking industry that is at a high level of compliance, and we're forced to compete with folks who do have a significant opportunity to evade.
Well, I appreciate that answer. I guess what does that indicate then, if the total evasion rate is 25%, that the rate of your interstate long haul, the rate of evasion among interstate long haul truck drivers must be substantially higher than 25%.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, I would think that the rate of evasion for carriers that are based outside of the state is much higher than it is for those of us based in here. Matter of fact, based on my professional experience, I think I can confirm that.
Okay.
Basically, what we've done here is we've told you what our objections are to the weight mile tax. We're not uniform with other states. It's a very complex and administratively burdensome and therefore expensive tax to collect.
And three, we believe that the rate of evasion is very high. So that's our problem. Now let's talk about the solution. The next tab that you have is revenue neutrality. And this is sort of, from this committee's perspective, the guts of our proposal. Now, we took a different approach this time than we have in the past. As I mentioned earlier, we wanted to thank Representative Wells and Lehman, because what they did is they co-chaired the subcommittee that developed this revenue neutral analysis. The way it was conducted, it was an informal process. It was open. Everybody was at the table. We had AAA, we had AOI, we had Association of General Contractors, OCAPA, cities, counties, ODOT, anybody and everybody that wanted to participate. And we spent almost 6 months going through each number that you'll see on these pages as we do this. A clarification of terms, what revenue neutral means is that the trucking industry will pay the same amount, if not more, under the diesel fuel tax than we would under the existing system. Before we get into the detail of the revenue neutral analysis, I'd like to put some things in context for you and talk a little bit about what the trucking industry is. Last February, to give us a foundation for calculating our proposal, what we did is we asked for the Department of Transportation what's now become known as a box of numbers. We wanted all the numbers on our transportation finance system so that we have some basis to calculate our proposal. And what's being handed out to you now are two pages out of that box of numbers. The top page basically is the number of trucks. It's entitled the Oregon Department of Transportation plate counts by weight groups. Because there are trucks that go in and out of the system, there's generally more plates than there are trucks operating at any given time, a little bit more. But I just point that out to you as we go through. And what I'd like to point out to you is at the 78 to 80,000 pound weight class, and you'll see the numbers all of a sudden get huge. We go to, and these are in thousands, go ahead to 266,988 plates for 1996, 269,271 for 1997. That's 78% of the total trucks are right there at 80,000 pounds. So when we talk about the trucking industry, now, we're talking, by and large, about large trucks. Now, when we look at the trucks that are operating over 80,000 pounds, all the way up to what's shown here is 106 to 108, and that's an additional 9%. So what we've got is 87% of the trucks are operating at 80,000 pounds or over. So the trucking industry is operating big trucks. Now, the second page you've got are the weight mile tax revenues for the same period of time. Again, looking at the 80,000 pound bracket, you'll see that in 1996, $127 million of the total was collected in that weight class. In 1997, $130 million of the total. That's 70% of the total weight mile tax is collected from trucks that are operating at 80,000 pounds. Those that were operating over 80,000 pounds, they paid an additional 17% of the tax for a total of 87%. So basically what we've got is 87% of the trucks are 80,000 pounds and over. 87% of the tax is paid by those trucks that are 80,000 pounds and over. And you ask why that is and why that huge bulge at 80,000 pounds. We have some strange things in transportation, and one of them is that the national legal limit for truck weights is 80,000 pounds. And what that means is that every state must allow a truck to operate with five axles at 80,000 pounds by federal law. So a truck can't place any more stringent restrictions than that. Otherwise, for those of you that are in the legal business, then there would be a Commerce Clause problem. They would be impeding interstate commerce. And then what happens, and has happened over the years, is the states have additional size and weight regulations, and they permit folks to operate above 80,000 pounds. And that's what you're seeing here in Oregon. We allow trucks to operate up to 105,500 pounds. Of course, their tax rates go up significantly when they do that. But what you've got over 80,000 are primarily Oregon trucks operating within Oregon because they're being responsive to the Oregon size and weight regulation. Okay? Now, let's look at the revenue neutral analysis. And for those of you that are like me, the page that's in your book is reduced from this legal size page. So I'm passing the longer one out because the numbers are bigger and it's easier to see. When we turn to that page, and this particular spreadsheet was prepared by the Department of Transportation and is the output of the revenue neutral analysis that this huge group worked on for 6 months. This is the most recent analysis and includes the changes that we made in 3344 in the House Transportation Committee. This was produced on April 15th. Okay, what you've got is a comparison for four calendar years, the years 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2003. The top section is the revenues that are projected to be collected under the existing system. So what we've got is weight mile tax collections, and I'm going to focus on the year 2000 just for simplicity, and we can look at the other years in point of comparison. The weight mile tax is forecast to collect $211 million. The road use assessment fee, which is a tax on trucks that are hauling huge machines and transformers and those kinds of things that weigh over 98,000 pounds. I don't know if you folks were aware, but occasionally we have loads in Oregon that exceed 750,000 pounds for a single truck. Of course, there are lots of axles and lots of tires and all that kind of stuff under these things. But recognizing that virtually everything we have at some point or another moved by truck, even that big stuff. So that's what the road use assessment fee is. It's on those kinds of movements. It's a separate tax. Registration fees today collect about $13 million, or will in 2000. Heavy trailer registration fees collect about $583,000 a year. Miscellaneous fees and penalties, $13.3 million a year. And currently, there are certain classes of trucks that do pay a diesel fuel tax in the state. There is, in fact, a diesel fuel tax in existence, and there are a number of trucks that do pay that, and that collects $16 million a year in revenue. So the total target was $255,691,000 for the year 2000. Now we start going through the analysis of House Bill 3344 and how we get back to that number of $255 million. And you'll see the vehicle mile of travel number that ODOT forecast for the year 2000, 1.8 billion miles per travel. Put that in context, that's 7% of the total miles of travel for all vehicles on Oregon highways, meaning that there are 93% more miles that are driven by cars than there are by trucks. And the next item is the miles per gallon figure that's used to calculate this analysis, and it's 5.53 miles per gallon. The way we came up with that particular number is we went into ODOT's existing international fuel tax agreement records and said, what's the tax rate for all these trucks that are operating in and through Oregon? And in fact, it was 5.53. Now, we're comfortable with that number for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of the trucks that are operating only within Oregon, for example, log trucks, they don't get as high of a miles per gallon as a highway truck, and these are all highway trucks. So a log truck is going to get significantly less miles per gallon than the 5.53. Similarly, folks like my company that's doing a lot of local work in the Portland area, we haul piggyback containers and steamship containers in the local Portland area a lot. Our miles per gallon is also significantly less. There has also been a recent agreement between the Environmental Protection Agency and the truck engine manufacturers that will keep the miles per gallon from increasing. What happened, is kind of interesting aside, is all of our engines today are computer controlled. And what the engine manufacturers were doing is they were giving the EPA an engine with a certain chip in it to be tested for emissions. And then once it was approved by EPA, they replaced that chip with one that was more efficient and sold the engine to us. So the emissions were dramatically increased in the engines that we were actually operating versus those that had been tested by EPA. In a recent agreement with EPA, the engine manufacturers have obviously agreed not to do that anymore. They've agreed to put the correct chips in the engines that are sold to us. They've also agreed that any time an engine is rebuilt, that they will supply a rebuild kit to put back in those chips that have the lower emissions, but also the lower miles per gallon. Actually, at this point in the near term, we are forecasting a slight reduction in miles per gallon through the next several years. The combination of the vehicle miles of travel and the miles per gallon figure gives you an estimate of the total gallons that would be consumed of diesel fuel tax. And then there's the diesel fuel tax rate at 25 cents a gallon, which would raise basically $82 million a year. Dick mentioned the 2% offset to offset the collection costs of the petroleum industry. That would reduce that amount by $1.6 million, bringing in net to $80 million. Can we go to the next section? The road use assessment fee, although we've changed the format, we don't believe that it will change the revenue, and so we'll continue to collect $555,000. The registration fees for the trucks under our proposal go up dramatically. Under the diesel fuel tax and registration fee system, we'll be collecting $153,887,000 in registration fee revenues. So essentially what we've done is where today the weight mile tax is the principal source of revenue and the registration fee is a secondary source of revenue, under our diesel fuel tax proposal, the registration fee is going to be the principal source of revenue, and the diesel fuel tax will be secondary. That's significant from one important point of view, and that is from the evasion point of view. Registration fees are the most heavily enforced tax. And the way that happens, as you know, you've got a license plate on your vehicle, you've got a sticker on that license plate, and every law enforcement officer is authorized to enforce that registration fee requirement. And they pull you over all the time. Matter of fact, I was driving on Salem City streets the other day, and I just recently re-registered my car, and I put the stickers on the wrong corners. And I got stopped by an Oregon State policeman right outside my office because I had the stickers mixed up. So it is a heavily enforced system and generally believed to be the least evaded tax of any kind in this whole transportation system. And then we go through the heavy trailer registration fees. The miscellaneous fees and penalties were reduced significantly from what they are today because there's lots of penalties that are assessed under the weight mile tax system that will go away. And then we continue to have the fuel tax paid by heavy vehicles. That gives us a subtotal of $260 million. And Dick was talking earlier about some of the adjustments that we have made to bring equity into our new system. And as Mr. McKellar was saying, What we've done is we've tried to make sure that each segment of the industry is paying approximately what it does today under the weight mile tax under the new diesel fuel tax. And each segment has different operating characteristics. So these are not subsidies of any kind. What these are is recognition that there's different operating characteristics of these types of vehicles, and we're making cost-responsible adjustments to make sure that these folks are held revenue neutral or held harmless under the new system. First one is concrete mixer trucks. There's a reduction in registration fees of $1.7 billion. Low mileage trucks, these are trucks that are under 60,000 pounds that operate less than 30,000 total miles per year. These are Bill Stewart's trucks that he was talking about earlier. There's a reduction of $2.5 million. Log trucks, $4.5 million. Refuse trucks, $2.2 million. Sand and gravel trucks, $14.5 million. Tow trucks, $530,000 for a total of reduced registration fees of $26 million. We also made some adjustments to the diesel fuel tax. As Dick explained to you earlier, there are sort of two circumstances when it's appropriate to make those adjustments. One is when the fuel is used to power some other form of equipment. We refer to this as the power takeoff. For example, the cement mixer that goes down the street and it's turning that drum to keep the cement from drying. That's burning fuel, but it's not burning fuel to propel the vehicle on the highway. That's an example of a power takeoff application. And so that it's justifiable to have a reduction in diesel fuel taxes as a result. Self-loading log trucks also, I mean, they sit on the road and they don't move and they use their truck engines to do the crane. There's also off-road credits. Right now, if you're operating off public highways, you do not have to pay the weight mile tax, nor do you have to pay a diesel fuel tax, so we maintain that credit for off-road mileage. And the next item you'll see was the administrative cost avoidance. This is the savings from the reduction in personnel at ODOT of $5.7 million for the year 2000. And Dick talked about a number of increased fees, various fees that are levied against the trucking industry. That's the next section that you will see, $3.7 million in total for the increases in fees. And the one-time inventory tax takes place 1-1-year 2000, raises $936,000. Additional revenue due from light trucks because we're moving the point of collection from what is now the pump to the rack. And ODOT recognizes that we are going to reduce tax evasion significantly for that group of trucks. And so they're crediting us with a $779,000 for that particular year. There's some interest credits because the registration fees are collected in advance, where the weight mile tax is collected after the fact. So ODOT's going to have the benefit of that money for a period of time if they don't have it now, so there's some interest calculations. And there's also a one-time benefit because there's a huge amount of tax from the weight mile system that falls in an accounting period, and you also collect the registration fees up front. That's the $8.6 million that you see down there in the middle of the next section. So the total revenue that we're going to collect for the year 2000 under this bill, based on the analysis of hundreds of folks, is $256,200,958. What that is a surplus over revenue neutrality of about $500,000. The reason that's over revenue neutral is because a lot of the adjustments we made for 2000 and 2001 to keep those 2 years in balance. And you'll see going across the bottom that in 2001, we're shy of revenue neutrality by $424,000. So the 2 years together balance. Then when we were in house transportation, we added an additional increase in the diesel fuel tax that would go into effect January 1 of 2002 if the legislature in 2001 fails to set a permanent diesel fuel tax rate in statute. That brings the years 2002 and 2003 to revenue neutrality, and what that's showing is that in 2002, we would collect $1.1 million more from the trucking industry than is revenue neutral. In calendar year 2003, $130,000 more than is revenue neutral. In order to get to this level, the registration fees for trucks will increase significantly, as Dick mentioned. So turn to the next page. You can see the new registration fee total. We also will see comparisons between the existing registration fees, focusing again on the predominant weight group of 80,000 pounds. You'll see that the current registration fees are $320. The fixed registration fees under the proposal are $652. So in some instances, like Mr. McKellar mentioned, that log trucks will pay $652 plus $500 of the variable. They pay $1,152. That's where that comes from. The variable is the difference between the total and the fixed. Highway trucks will pay our registration fees of $3,601. Turning to the next section, one of the issues that has been raised in making the shift from the weight mile tax to the diesel fuel tax is everybody wanted to be sure that it's reasonably fair to all segments of the trucking industry. Believe me, I wanted to be sure that it's reasonably fair because the Oregon Trucking Association represents virtually every segment of the trucking industry that operates in Oregon. If it wasn't fair, I wouldn't be here today. And that's also, I think, demonstrated by the support from all the other associations that are in support of this bill. Although we went a step beyond that, we've got every trucking association in the state of Oregon supporting this, but we went a step beyond to look at the trucking industry a little closer and also, quite frankly, to make sure that everybody in the trucking industry was aware of the proposal and they knew how it would impact them. AOI did a survey that was completed by Martin Nelson, and we assisted with that survey, although it is clearly theirs. And what you have here are the preliminary results of that survey. We are still working on some of the surveys. Surveys were sent to all Oregon-based trucking companies that operate three or more trucks. And that's most of the trucks that operate in and through Oregon by Oregon-based companies. There are a number of companies, of course, that operate two or less. The first page of the survey, and we'll sort of just briefly go through the results. And the first thing we were trying to do is get a profile of what this group looked like. 17% operate entirely in Oregon. 55% operate primarily in Oregon, but they do operate interstate. And 22% operate in Oregon, but operate primarily out of state. So what we've got are 77% of the Oregon-based trucking companies that are operating in interstate commerce. That's significant and a major change in the trucking industry since we were deregulated in 1995. As we've talked earlier, going down to question number two, most of our trucks are heavy. 62% of those that were surveyed are operating trucks that are 80,000 pounds and above. We're also operating relatively high miles, much higher than you would operate in your car. 48% are operating over 60,000 miles per year in Oregon. The Oregon trucking industry is also primarily comprised of relatively small companies when we look at question number four. 51% have fleets that with truck sizes between 3 and 10, which is relatively small. And the one that I used as an example operates 65 trucks, and that would be in the 6th percentile under 51 to 100. The next page, we start talking about the results. Of those surveyed, 73% favor this proposal, and 19% were opposed, and 8% still aren't sure after all we went through to educate them on what we were doing. From our perspective, and that's an overwhelming mandate from this segment of the trucking industry, There are lots of reasons to oppose a change like this, probably the most significant being that it is a change to a system that's been in place in our state for about 50 years. When we talk about savings in administrative costs, more than half expect that they're going to save administrative costs. 30% said that they weren't. When we talked about what segment of the trucking industry, that's question 7 that you see. And question 8, are you going to pay more or less or about the same under the current system? And then if you'll go to questions 9 and 10, it shows you how much more or less each expected to pay. Now, from the trucking industry's perspective, we believe that we have created a proposal that is equitable to the industry as a whole, and there's a couple of points that I would like to make. First, whenever you make a change to any tax system, as you folks know, is the Revenue Committee, and you're going to have some winners, you're going to have some losers, and you're going to have a bunch of folks that are about the same. I think what we found with this proposal is we have exactly that. What we haven't found is any group or segment of the trucking industry that's being treated disadvantageously under this proposal. What we've got are light trucks, some paying more, some paying less, some paying about the same. Heavy trucks, the same thing. Low mileage vehicles, the same. High mileage vehicles, the same. They're all over the board within a fairly narrow band. Now, from our perspective, equity is very important in the tax system, but it's a little different perspective than what we normally talk about. From our perspective, competitive equity is paramount. It's essential that no segment of the trucking industry be treated differently. For example, we don't want one log truck to pay one level of tax and another log truck to pay a lower level of tax because all of a sudden you've got a competitive disparity. We want to ensure that each segment of the trucking industry is treated the same so that they're competing based on the services they provide and the prices they charge their customers, not the amount of tax that they're paying. We're very comfortable that we have achieved competitive equity, which means that each group is being treated fairly. Within each group, you've got some variation, but it's within a narrow band. And there are other studies that you may hear about as we go through this process. The other studies that have been done to look at the equity issue and the cost and the revenue neutrality issue are by and large theoretical studies. They are not based on the actual data or a model of the trucking industry. And the AOI survey is unique in that regard. And we went out to the trucking industry and we polled each fleet and asked them to calculate how much tax do you pay under the existing system, how much do you pay how much will you pay under the new system, where do you fall? And that is a unique aspect of the AOI survey, and from our perspective, therefore, makes it the result far more believable.
And is it okay to interrupt you?
Absolutely. Please.
On the revenue neutrality issue,
mm-hmm.
if there is an increase in the gas tax, that's
mm-hmm.
fairly likely, say, a 4 cents a gallon one. My understanding is there'd be a commensurate increase in the funding that the trucking industry is paying, and I think I've been told anyway that would be probably about $44 million more than is being paid currently. So how does your proposal, or does it take that into account in its assessment of revenue neutrality going to the new system you propose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, the trucking industry is very much in support of House Bill 2082. We support an increase, and we support an increase in our taxes. We would do that under the new system by changing the registration fees and the diesel fuel tax. But as the way we go through this process, this is set at revenue neutrality. As the two bills wend their way through, at some point there will be conflict amendments to make sure that they conform with one another. But what I can assure you is that the trucking industry, with the diesel fuel tax proposal,
is in support of House Bill 2082.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Shenaman.
Also, I guess on revenue neutrality, looking at question 8 on the survey, it shows 21 responding indicating they would pay more, 41 indicating that they would be paying less. Does that mean that those who are paying more must be paying substantially more than those who are paying less, where you have those numbers, but still coming out to revenue neutrality?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, this has been a living process in some respects. We made an initial proposal that went before the Sidman Wells subcommittee. This survey was based on that initial proposal. The revenue neutral analysis began at that point. By the time we got through with the revenue neutral analysis, we had a little bit different set of tax rates. Essentially, the tax rates that I showed you a moment ago showed that an 80,000 pound truck would pay $3,601. The total registration fees, they were under that column. The original proposal, they would have paid $3,150. So what we've had is, when you look at that particular question, we have increased the registration fees on the highway trucks. So that's going to change that distribution somewhat and get us closer to parity.
Okay. Can I follow up on that, please?
Sure.
Do you have a survey then that reflects the responses to these same questions based on the current proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, no, we do not. Matter of fact, we have additional changes in the registration fees yet to come, and not only as a result of 2082, if it should pass, but also because of cost allocation, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And this is a living process, and as each piece of information comes into the process, things change. Cost allocation will not only affect this proposal, but it will also affect any gas tax proposal that you may consider. And at this particular time, we've got some, I think what we would characterize as preliminary final results, but the cost allocation results are not yet final, and we don't know what the final rates will be even at revenue neutrality, other than we know based on the way we've conducted the analysis, we can make the adjustment and assure the continuation of revenue neutrality into the future.
Any other questions?
Oh, okay. Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum, please ask questions. Now, the next section is, in fact, cost allocation. Dick gave you a fairly brief presentation last week about the, and what I'm calling at this point, the preliminary final results of the cost allocation study. The purpose of cost allocation really is to balance the books between trucks and cars. You've got different economic factors that affect the trucking industry versus what affects increases or decreases in car travel. For example, car travel, much of which is very discretionary, is highly impacted by the price of gasoline. As the price of gasoline goes up, and travel goes down, consumption goes down, and so do revenue. On the other hand, the trucking industry is not subject to the discretionary travel. We don't generally joyride in our trucks. We're out there responding.
Carl Malone does.
He used it. We're not as influenced by the cost of diesel. What we are influenced by are changes in the economy, or in other words, the demand for our services. As the economy improves and manufacturing goes up and trucking activity goes up, conversely, when it goes down. So this state has had a long history of balancing those two opposing forces between cars and trucks with cost allocation. We've been doing that since 1937, and the trucking industry supports cost allocation and its continuation, and certainly our commitment is
to implement the results when they're final and when there's some consensus that we agree to them. And there's some differences in this particular cost allocation study, some questions that haven't yet been resolved, and I'd just like to go through a couple of them with you to sort of show you where we are. I also had the privilege of sitting on what was called the Cost Allocation Study Review Team, and it was a group of folks that oversaw the cost this current cost allocation study from the beginnings of doing the RFP to obtain the contractors that actually did the study, to awarding the contracts, to going through the study process, and we're still working on all of that stuff. Here's something that changed significantly with this particular study that still, at least in my mind, is unresolved. This was a major change in this study versus previous studies. What's being passed out to you is an analysis of the allocation of administrative and overhead costs at the Department of Transportation. In the past, the way it worked is that the trucking industry paid 100% of the cost of motor carrier administration, and you'll see that almost in the middle of the page. And indeed, 100% of the motor carrier administration is being charged to the trucking industry. You'll see directly to the left of that, the Motor Vehicle Administration, or DMV. And the trucking industry pays 4.8% of that, and the rest of that goes to cars. Essentially, what you have is DMV provides the services to cars, with the exception of truck driver licensing and some titling functions, and the Motor Carrier Administration provides the services to trucks. So each of us pay respectively for those services. And the rest of the overheads are allocated. Now, our total cost allocation under the new study, as Dick mentioned to you last week, is the trucking industry is to pay 36.1% of the total cost of our highways in the state. What this shows is we're supposed to pay 42.1% of the administrative cost. That doesn't compute to us. Why, when we run 7% of the total miles of travel, we're paying the full cost of the services that are provided directly to us under the Motor Carrier Administration, how we could be responsible for such a large portion of the balance of the administrative and overhead costs at the Department of Transportation? If we looked at how this particular allocation was done under previous studies that were conducted by the Department of Transportation, they would have dropped the trucking industry share for administration and overhead from 42.1% to approximately 28%. And I did this calculation myself, so it's approximate. Now, what that means in real dollars is under the present system, the trucking industry is charged with $51 million of the administrative and overhead costs of ODOT. Under the way it used to be done, we would have been charged with $34 million for a difference of $16 million. That is a significant difference in the burden of the trucking industry under this particular study. I'm not saying that 28% is right. I am saying that 42%, which in fact exceeds our overall cost responsibility, is too high. And we're continuing to look into that. Dick's working on it, and we ought to be able to get there. There's another issue that I'd like to briefly mention, and that is when you look at the reduction under the previous study, the trucking industry was responsible to pay 37.7% of the total cost. Under this study, we're responsible to pay 36.1%. That 1.6% percentage point reduction, when I calculate it, that would be a credit to the trucking industry of $10.8 million. However, the calculations that we have coming back from the contractors show that that's only $5.8 million, and that doesn't make any sense. So I think what I'm trying to express to you is that the cost allocation study is still a work in progress. We're continuing to work through some of these issues. From our perspective, we're very hopeful that perhaps even later this week, we're going to have some additional information, and therefore we'll be able to make a yet another investment in those registration fees that reflects revenue neutrality plus cost responsibility. However, I want to reassure you that the trucking industry is committed to cost allocation, and that if we're not able to make those adjustments at this stop in the process, we will certainly make them when it gets to the Senate as soon as those results are available. Turning to the next section, I just want to do a very brief, matter of fact, I think I will skip the brief overview because you had a fairly comprehensive overview that Dick provided you first thing this morning. I'm going to go by that, except I want to make a couple of points here. One, I think that what we've developed is by far the best diesel fuel tax system in the nation. And that wasn't such a huge feat in one sense. We have every other state that has a diesel fuel tax today, and we could sort of look at what works and what doesn't work. And we did incorporate the best features of each state's diesel fuel tax into our bill. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank Joan Robinson of Legislative Council. She spent over a year working on this particular bill. It was a monumental task. The bill itself has been reviewed by the same group that we talked about that was dealing with revenue neutrality. The Department of Transportation has had the bill for months, and we made extensive amendments to the original versions at their request. The bill has also been sent all over the country to every tax expert that we could find to make sure that it was solid. And we believe that Joan has done an outstanding job, and are off to her very professional effort. The last thing that I would sort of like to go over with you are sort of what we consider to be the guts of this whole issue. And they are the policy issues. What is this all about? I mean, I think that we've been able to adequately demonstrate to you that we're revenue neutral, we're committed to cost responsibility, we've been reasonably equitable within all the segments of the trucking industry, which are the standards that we set for ourselves as we started out developing this proposal. But yet there continues to be a significant amount of debate about whether we should go from a weight mile tax to a diesel fuel tax. Why does that debate continue? And I think there are really three reasons why that happens. Number one, in 1995, Congress deregulated trucking intrastate. 1980, interstate trucking was deregulated. That 1995 action by Congress irrevocably changed the trucking industry in a whole lot of ways. It was in-state regulation that was preempted by Congress in 1995. Prior to that time, the Public Utility Commission totally regulated those trucks that operated within the state. If you wanted to get in the trucking business, you had to go to the PUC to get permission. You had to go through extensive hearings and all that kind of stuff in order to get a certificate that allowed you to participate in the business. The PUC set the rate. They told you how to provide the service. They did everything. In a sense, there was a parental relationship between the PUC and the trucking industry. They told us what to do and when to do it and how to do it. That all ended by congressional action on January 1, 1995. And we then became a very competitive industry. In many ways, that's been very good. It's increased competition. It's reduced rates that we charge to shippers. It's done some real positive things. But that competition has also forced us to become more efficient than we were under a regulated environment. We didn't have to be as efficient when we were regulated, because if the PUC thought there was good reason for us to be inefficient, then they would just build it into our rates that we charged our customers. In the old days, weight mile tax, we knew it was inefficient, and we knew that it was costly, but it was built into the rates that the PUC passed along to the shipper. It used to be, and actually from 1983 through 1991, the trucking industry supported every tax increase, gas tax increase, and corresponding weight mile tax increase that went through this building. We were there, and sort of the way it worked is that at the time, my predecessor, Mike Meredith, would come over to me at PUC, and he'd say, come on, you guys, come over. We'd come over, and we'd be towards the end of session, and the legislators would say, well, we're going to do a 2+2 increase in the gas tax or whatever it is. And Mike would turn to me and say, well, tell these folks that you'll let us build the weight mile tax increase to our rates, and I'd go, yes. And they'd say, okay, we're on board, and that would be it. Off we go. Well, that's no longer the case. That inefficiency in the weight mile tax is putting an incredible burden on the Oregon trucking industry. It's the Oregon trucking industry that has to fill out these tax reports. It's the Oregon trucking industry that is put at a competitive disadvantage. It's the Oregon trucking industry that's coming to you and asking for a more efficient tax system so we can maintain our competitive position in the marketplace. So that's point number one. Point number two was that we're not rocket scientists. As I mentioned to you earlier, when Congress increased our federal taxes by 50%, they offset that with a corresponding administrative cost saving by changing the collection mechanism of the tax. We're asking for the same thing. And the last couple of sessions, the trucking industry has not been in a position to support additional increases in the weight mile tax. What we were looking for was a mechanism that could save us administrative costs in our tax system and allow us to come back to the table and support an additional tax increase. We make our living off the highway. We know only too well the condition of our highways, the amount of congestion in our urban areas. What that means to us is when the highways deteriorate, our trucks get beat up, our maintenance costs go up, when there's heavy congestion, it slows us down, we've got higher labor costs. We want to be there to support an increase in taxes. And this proposal gives us the ability, not only this session, but in the future, because we believe with the recapture of evasion in the next session, we'll also be able to support increased funding for our highways. So what we're asking you to do is to give us a more efficient system so the trucking industry can once again come to the table as a partner in increasing funding for our highways. The third issue, which is one of the most important, is that we sort of got this tradition in Oregon of how highway use taxes work. And the way that they've always worked is in house transportation, there was the gas tax. And usually came to transportation with nothing but blanks. There was no gas tax rate or anything. And at some point in the session, there would be some political consensus that this was the level of increase that needs to happen. And so there would be a gas tax rate that would be put in the bill. And then House Transportation would pass that on to the House Revenue Committee. And you would get the bill, and you would see that there was a gas tax rate, and there were car registration fees, and you'd look at truck taxes, and you'd see all these blanks. And there weren't any tax rates in there. Matter of fact, if you look at 2082, as it came out of House Transportation, it has gas tax rates in there. It doesn't have a single weight mile tax rate. It's all blank. The way the system has worked is it's been, we're going to do whatever we're going to do with the gas tax, and then an equivalent in weight mile. And we don't know what that equivalency is. We don't know what it really means to the trucking industry. At some point in time, somebody will come up with a tax table, and that will get put in the bill. That tax table, when you look at it, it will make your eyes close. It's just a whole bunch of numbers on a page. It doesn't mean anything. What's the difference between 136.5 mils and 155? bills. You know, I don't know, but I can tell you, having to pay the difference, and that is a huge change in the 80,000-pound tax rate. What's happened is that the legislature has not fully understood the white mile tax system, so as they have been going about setting tax policy for our state, they have been not setting the tax policy for the trucking industry because it's a system that they don't understand. If they set the gas tax, then you got an equivalent in white mile tax. Now, when we talk about a 25-cent a gallon diesel fuel tax and a registration fee of $3,601 a year, you understand it. You know exactly what that means. It's not in mills. It's not confusing. And you know exactly what that's going to do to the trucking industry.
Mm, Mr. Chair?
Yes, General.
Well, actually, in terms of achieving revenue neutrality, I think we're in the same, earlier, we're talking about the same thing, aren't we? Here we're talking about making adjustments to the gas tax and then an equivalent adjustment to the weight and mile tax. I think we probably have the same level of understanding or lack of understanding on the legislature's part of how we're achieving revenue neutrality. And it's, you know, we deal with the, we don't build the tax rates here in the committee. That's a staff function. I think that we accept that. We set out what the target is. And I think you're asking the same thing in this bill to set out a target of revenue neutrality, but we're not going to do the math in this committee to determine how we do that. We're going to rely on staff to achieve that for us based on what we, you know, the directive.
We understand weight mile every bit as well as we understand timber taxes and intended. Thank you for standing up for us.
That's right. There we go. Now I feel defended.
I guess the point that I was trying to make is that from the trucking industry's perspective, it's long been believed that when you see a change in the weight mile tax rate, you don't really understand what that means in dollars and cents to the trucking companies that are operating in Oregon. But I think that we all can relate to diesel fuel tax and registration fees because in one form or another we pay them. They're a more understandable system. And I think that from our perspective, we feel more comfortable with that system, knowing that you will not only consider the revenue neutral and the cost allocation and all of that stuff, but you will also look at the level of increase on the parking industry and take that into consideration when you set tax policy for the state. Our feeling has been in the past that with the weight mile tax, it's been the gas tax, and the weight mile tax has not really been in that debate. That's the point that I was trying to make.
I don't know that I would disagree with you entirely, but I do think that there is, you know, there is still a policy rationale behind saying if there's a cost allocation proportion and cars are going to increase by this much, then trucks should increase by that same amount. I think that's, if there's any parity or any level of understanding of the policy issues, I think that's where it's going. But you're right in terms of saying, do we understand how this is going to affect every category weight of truck and, you know, the effect on their miles traveled? Of course not.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Chairman. And I guess our point is that in deliberation, if you understood our tax system, then it may have an impact at some point in time on how high you raise the gas tax, because you will recognize what that does to the trucking industry. We certainly recognize the need to keep them in balance, and we support that when we have an issue with them. Just a couple of concluding points that I would like to make. Are we asking you to take a leap of faith in making this change? And I think the answer to that question is we don't think we are. Remember that every state has a diesel fuel tax today. Every Canadian province has one. We're the only state that does. I think that you can see that we have made an incredible effort to develop this proposal and bring you what we think is the best diesel fuel tax proposal in the country. And there are a lot of unique features to our proposal that just went over this morning that no other state has that we think provide you additional assurances that this system will do what we say it will do. For example, the variable diesel fuel tax rate and the additional fees for trucks operating the heavy axles of 80,000 pounds and those kinds of things. And we would ask that you would consider this decision carefully, and we hope that by the time we get to the end of the week, you will provide your support. And that concludes the testimony for this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob, very much. I think your voice needs a break. We appreciate the material that you presented, and we'll be considering it carefully. Looking for recognition.
Always that, but I got the question.
I should say looking to be recognized. Hey, the committee's adjourned.
Give him a little more recognition.